And good afternoon. Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. Phil Conlon is here.
Yes, good afternoon, Phil. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. And Phil Conlon has a program, of course, each Wednesday, Classical Underground, 6 to 8 p.m. Today, we really, I think we're privileged. We're going to be speaking to a journalist, an independent journalist in Latakia, Syria, and we're going to try to find out the latest news. There's an issue that is underreported and misreported. And since everybody now cares about false news and all that stuff, we are too. And so we're interested in why the mainstream media here is not emphasizing the fact. I can't account for that. I forgot to turn off the washing machine. They're not interested in a really heinous kind of crime being committed by the terrorists outside Damascus. And we'll get the details from Steve Sahuni in Latakia, we hope, in short order.
I'm here, Phil.
Oh, by golly, I hear you, Steve. If you can hear me, I think we can proceed. It's fortunately it's coming right through the wall, so it's working out fine from my end. Now, Stephen, you're in Latakia. I should tell people again, your writings appear on the net and at Global Research and elsewhere, but we've been very happy to be talking to you. The story today, in my mind, is two things. What is the crisis, or how much of a crisis has been caused to the water system in Damascus, and I believe there's also a story about similar difficulties in Aleppo traced to the deliberate actions of terrorists. Can you confirm that, and what can you tell us about it? Hello?
I can hear you, Phil.
Okay, good. Did you hear the question?
Yeah.
What is?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Tell us about it, in your view.
This is not a coincidence, Phil, that the terrorist groups funded by the Gulf and funded Turkey and the United States government to cut off the water on the capital of Damascus, the city that has over 5 million people and is the capital of Syria. This crisis is the biggest crisis in the history of Damascus about water, because Damascus had no similar crisis like this. But for the reason why the terrorist groups are doing this and cutting off the war on Damascus is pressuring the Syrian government and pressuring the Russians because of the victory that the Syrian army did in Aleppo, that huge victory, and has changed the whole war and the whole path of the war, because as we know, that Aleppo is the economical capital of Syria and is the most important city in Syria after the capital Damascus. So at the same time we are seeing when the Syrian army announced Aleppo freed, we saw ISIS out of nowhere coming and attacking Tadmor, and what a coincidence. And and the American jet planes did help the ISIS fighters in Tadmor. And also, so that will—it's all connected to each other. And if you want to see the terrorist groups who are fighting in the suburbs of Damascus in Ain al-Fija, where the war is, it's all groups who are funded by Qatar, Saudi, and Turkey. Mm-hmm. So we see this crisis is related. You cannot split it out from Aleppo, the victory of Aleppo. It is connected to Aleppo, and it's a big cause that they're trying to pressure the Syrian government. They're trying to pressure the Russians, but it will not work. And as information that I got, that in the next few days, the Syrian army already started operation to take over the river and the well of Ain Fijia Barada, and in the next few days, the Syrian army and his allies on the ground will have control of all of the area and all of the war wells in that area. So next few days we will have good news coming from the coming from the suburbs of Damascus. As I told you before, the Syrian army, any battle he goes into, he wins. And he will win this war, and he already progressed. The Syrian army tried to solve this problem by negotiation with the terrorists, to moving them out of that area, first of all, for the water, for the 4 or 5 million people of Damascus. Number two, also for the civilians there. In that area, in Fiji and Barada, have over 2,000 terrorists. 2,000 terrorists who are from different groups.
2,000, I'm sorry, did you say 2,000 fighters? What?
Yeah, 2,000 fighters in that area where the war wells off.
Well, by the way, now, so, this is Stephen Sahuni, who is a Syrian-American journalist, lives in Latakia, I believe. Are these, the 2,000 you speak of, now, are they among those who have rejected the peace talks that are going on?
Yes. Yes, they are, because some of them, look, some of them are ISIS, some of them are al-Nusra, some of them are Ahrar al-Sham and others. You're going to ask me how each one of, we always hear that these groups are fighting with each other. How are they now getting along? And they're not getting along. Each one of them has a piece of the area, is in charge. And they are just fighting back the Syrian army when he is, when he wants to attack. So now the Syrian army and his allies on the ground are fighting not only one group, fighting all of
You live in a busy neighborhood.
Fighting, fighting all of these groups who are 2,000. Some of them are from the area, and some of them are from the outside of the area. But as I told you, there are around 2,000, and the next few, the Syrian army already started an operation to free that area, and they will the Syrian army will announce in the next 72 hours that the area is liberated and free.
You're very optimistic. I'm very glad to hear this news. Now, I want to can you confirm, among other things, that, you know, unfortunately, the Western media has been, of course, distorting and hiding certain information. Is it your understanding that they use diesel fuel to poison the water?
That was a rumor. The terrorist group said that there's diesel to put in the water, and they're trying to poison and all of that. But that's all propaganda that scared the people of Damascus, because, as we know, in the last past 6 years, they couldn't enter Damascus. All of their battles against Damascus have failed. So how are they going to defeat the people of Damascus? Is by making them hungry, or making them thirsty to death. Yes. But as I told you, the Syrian army got back one of the hardest areas in Syria, and that's Aleppo. And the most dangerous areas in the world today is Aleppo. They got it back. So a small area with 2,000 terrorists is not going to be hard for the Syrian army. It's not about optimistic. It's that information from the ground. They told me, don't worry. We will have the area, and we'll have the wells very soon. And I also wanted to tell you that the Syrian government has tried their best to supply the people of Damascus's water from other wells, but we're not talking about 1,000 or 2,000 people. We're talking about 4 to 5 million. 4 to 5 million.
Incidentally, I've read reports, and one was a UN report, which typical UN language is awfully hard to decipher, but they seem to be saying that the Syrian government has been successful in basically supplying the basic needs for water. It's been difficult, and prices have gone up for people, black market water, that kind of thing. But they actually been handling it. It's just a difficult time.
Yeah, first of all, it's a difficult time. Second of all, the Syrian government is It's through award. They're trying to do their best. Number three, I always like to open the subject, and it is the Syrian people. They're the only people who are being damaged by the American and the European sanctions on Syria. No one is being damaged and hurted more than the Syrian people. Mm-hmm. So the prices went up of food, the prices went up on water, the prices went up on clothes, on everything, because of the sanctions on Syria. Mm-hmm. They're not damaging no one except the Syrian people. If really the American government and the Gulf countries and the Europeans, they really care about the Syrian people, they'll take off the sanctions immediately off of Syria.
Yes.
That's our big problem. Our problem is economically. Yes. Economy.
You mentioned this is a very interesting issue. I want to know the role of Turkey. Because as you say, these groups are starting to fight each other, which means, I assume, partly that some of their sponsors are also beginning to differ with each other. Turkey, I assume, has some influence over these, say, the 2,000 there and those and some of the fighters elsewhere. What do you think of the chances that Turkey will be able, or Mr. Erdogan, be able to live up to his promises to President Putin and to the leaders of the Islamic Republic and to others? I don't think the Syrian government is involved. I don't know in those talks. But he's made some big promises. What do you think of the chances he can deliver?
Look, let me tell you something. The situation between Turkey and Russia is not—it's not new. The as we remember, since the Turkish shot down the Russian plane, the relationship between the Turkish and the Russians was very tense, and they almost went into war with each other.
Of course, yeah.
But then. The situation and the negotiation went back, and the Russians and the Turkish sat down on the table and now became friends. It looks like the Russians gave something to the Turkish, and Turkish gave something to the Russian that made the Turkish president start slightly to change his moves. And we're seeing that started pissing off the American government, so they're punishing the Turkish by all of these terrorist attacks lately. Either it was on.
I was going to ask you that. It would appear that someone wants to wants to disrupt by means of terror this developing relationship between states who are holding meetings and not inviting Mr. Kerry or listening to Samantha Power.
Yeah. So that who's the most person who's not benefiting from the good relations between Turkey and Russia is the United States. So that will show you that who's doing all of this. Who's doing all of these terrorist attacks and who's, let's say, not doing them, ordering their people underground to do it? Is the Americans? But I think Erdogan and President Erdogan and the Turkish government they already gave a word to. Of course, you cannot take a word from the Turkish. They always are famous for stabbing you back through history. But I don't think he will think about playing around with the Russian government and Putin, or stab Putin in the back, because economically he will be damaged more than he will benefit. As much as the Gulf or the Americans give him, I think he will be damaged by the relationship. If the relationship between the between the Russians and the Turkish go bad, I think he will be damaged more than he will benefit. So I think he will go with his word, and I think I see that the war on Syria, it started the beginning of the end, especially after the Syrian army took over Aleppo with the Russians. I think we are seeing the beginning of the end of the Syrian crisis. It's not optimistic, but if you want to read it on the ground, the Syrian army and the Syrian government have in their hand Damascus, almost over half of the south of Syria. They have all of the coast. They have the city of Homs, that's one of the biggest cities. Then, as I told you, Latakia, and they have now the city of Aleppo. So they have over 65-70% of Syria in their hands. So mm-hmm. we are seeing the beginning of the end. We just have two more cities, and that is Raqqa. And that's connected with the battle of the Iraqi army with Mosul. Then we have the second battle, and that will be, I think that's easier, and that's Idlib, because all of the terrorists from all over Syria are being shipped to Idlib, so yes. that will be the easiest, not easy, what I'm saying by words. Huh? It's not going to be easy. It's going to be, there are going to be martyrs from the Syrian army side, but I'm saying because it's going to be easy, because the Turkish will shut their borders, and then the Syrian army and his allies will be attacking them from three different sides. Like, they have nowhere to run anymore. Uh-huh. So we are seeing them, the year of 2017, the victory, or the starting of the end. Sorry, again.
Okay. I'm surprised that people are driving like that at this time of night in Latakia.
Yeah, well, actually, when we're a city, we used to be 1 million, now we're 3.5 million after the war, thanks to the Americans and the Gulf.
From 1 to yeah. 3 million because of the war.
Yeah, because of the refugees.
Yes. And so you have, by the way, yeah. thank goodness you raised that subject, because America tried to play the refugee card, and they played it very heavily, neglecting to point out that most of the refugees are Syrian, who are in Syria in government areas, because that's their government and they feel safe there.
Of course.
And
yeah.
like you're talking about a city that is now 3 when it used to be 1 million.
Yeah.
But this is where people want to be, because that's where they're secure.
Of course, because now, as after the Syrian army took over back Aleppo, big numbers of the Syrian refugees in Latakia who are from Aleppo are going back to their houses. A lot of businesses who are used to have been owned by Aleppo people in Latakia have shut and been going back to their homes to start opening their homes and businesses and jobs in Aleppo. And also, yesterday, the president of Syria ordered the Syrian government, the prime minister, all of the ministers to go to Aleppo to start the rebuilding of Aleppo, and especially to rebuild the industrial area.
Mm-hmm. Well, by the way, we should remind everyone that Aleppo was robbed. These people that they... Americans celebrated as moderates and, wanting to, quote, reform the Syrian government. They took entire factories out of Aleppo and took them to Turkey.
Yes, that's true. All of the factories were robbed and shipped to Turkey by Erdogan and his son. The Syrian people built those factories one time, and it's not hard. We will rebuild them again. Syria has the money. Syria has the mind and the plans how to do it. So it's not that hard. We just need to finish take over the terrorism, and we'll have Aleppo, not only Aleppo and all of Syria back how it used to be. And I would like to say that Aleppo used to be the number one industrial city in the whole Middle East, not only in Syria.
Probably,
the whole Middle East.
And it will become that again.
Yes, it will.
By the way, I want our listeners to know this. I mean, we just celebrated Christmas, and I see that the footage, it's available on the Internet, featured here, but Christian leaders, I saw the leader of the Greek, I think it's the Eastern Orthodox, I should call it, church, went into back to where his church in eastern Aleppo, and he made, of course, the same statement you're making: we're going to rebuild. It'll be like it was.
Yes.
And here we are in the West, where people talk about religion and people being extremists. The extremists were defeated, and Christians are protected once again by the secular government of Syria. Am I right?
Yeah. And also, I want to tell you also that... the Syrian businessmen, and especially the Aleppo businessmen, who are known to be one of the richest businessmen in the whole Arab world and the Middle East, have already said before, when the crisis in the war on Aleppo started, and now, they say, and especially they repeated it after Aleppo got taken by the Syrian army and they said and they took a statement that we will rebuild Aleppo. We want no companies, no one. We won't let the government to spend one dime. We will rebuild Aleppo. So we have, as I told you, the same people have the will to rebuild their country. We just need to win these few back cities, back. And I hope we'll have peace how we used to in 2010. It's not hard. It's not impossible, but it's hard. But we can do it.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this about one factor that came up in the fighting as the victory was being won. The city of Aleppo was liberated. The terrorists struck at Palmyra, and I think it was. It seemed to be a consensus opinion that that was a diversion, of course, aided and abetted, by the way, by the French and the Americans and the British.
Yeah, that's true.
Using their resources. They brought a lot of fighters there. And that's a zone where they do a lot of flying in that zone. But the Syrian government and the Russians and others were not diverted. They kept their focus on Aleppo. I don't know, you might have covered it, but could you tell us what you think will... about the Palmyra situation?
The Syrian army and the Russians took back Palmyra about, I think, 1 year ago. Mm-hmm. And as we saw, the Syrian army was taking back Aleppo. They were fighting. They were making progress, getting back the areas and the cities and the neighborhoods. Then we suddenly, out of nowhere, the terrorists of ISIS, they're not even people or humans, murders, start attacking Palmyra and attacking the desert of Hummus. So that's not a coincidence. That will show you that it's planned and it was an order by the Gulf and the Americans. But what I would like to tell you is, when the Syrian army went into the streets of Aleppo and taking them back, the Syrian army found weapon storages that were enough to fund two armies. Mm-hmm. And there's videos of that on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And I will send you a link if you'd like today or tomorrow.
Please do.
Yeah, and you will see it's like a school. They had it just full of weapons, all kind of weapons. Mm-hmm. Weapons who are enough to fund two armies. As military expert said, these weapons are enough to fund two armies, to give two armies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That and all big, all kind of missiles, all kind of weapons, especially... made in America missiles, Tau missiles, all made in USA, made in France, made in Britain, all of that. And that's all in videos. Snipers, missiles, everything you want. They found it in the storages of the terrorist groups in Aleppo.
Yes. And by the way, also plenty of evidence of crimes against humanity, that is... mass graves and tortured people. That evidence
true.
Is also there. And I notice again that the Western media is wanting to try to keep this game alive by saying, oh, the Syrian army has committed crimes. But the evidence, of course, you know, it never was a secret. The terrorists are always proud of cutting people's throats and killing children. But
yeah.
I hope that a good list and criminal proceedings will unfold just in order to put the information in front of the world and also identify the perpetrators.
Yes, that's true. And I wanted to say, you made me remember that the terrorist group, right before they went out of Aleppo, there was still one neighborhood. As you remember, there was a deal to ship him out of Aleppo into Idlib. So right before they were shipped out of Idlib, what did they do? Is they killed all of the prisoners they had.
Mm-hmm. And they tried to take the bodies, didn't they? They got caught.
Yeah, they tried. They got caught there doing that. And also, there was a deal that the two villages in suburbs of Idlib who are surrounded by the terrorist groups, Kafraya and Fua, there was a deal that the sick, old sick people to go out, and the terrorists will go out of Aleppo, and the terrorists and the old sick people get out of Kafraya and Fua, who are surrounded. So,
while
the Syrian government...
I'm so glad you raised that. I feel very remiss. What is the status of those two? What are they, villages? I understand they're rather large areas in terms of population. Could you tell us about those two villages
huge.
That have been under
those
siege?
Those two villages are being under siege for over 2-3 years now. I don't like to talk this kind of stuff, but the reason why the terrorist groups are surrounding these two villages are because they are from the Shiite sect of the Islamic religion. Mm-hmm. As you know, so they're surrounding these two villages. It's the Syrian army and his allies are throwing food and aid to them by the airplanes. Mm-hmm. So the is very, very saddening, the situation there, the medical situation, the food, the war, all that is very rough and they're very hard. God only knows how they're surviving. Mm-hmm. But what I wanted to tell you is one of the part of the Aleppo deal is the terrorist deal go to Aleppo and the old sick people, they will be, and children, they will be shipped out of the two cities into Aleppo under the government area. So when the Syrian army sent the buses to move, to take out the old sick people, the terrorists did not allow the buses to go into the two villages. They burnt up the buses. There are around 20 to 22 buses. And some of the drivers were killed by the terrorist groups. Innocent drivers, they're just doing their job. Mm-hmm. So also that's a crime.
And they boasted, they boasted about doing it.
Yeah, they posted pictures and videos, and they were very proud of it.
They made anti-Shia propaganda. They used hateful terminology.
Yes, that's true. So that will show you. That will show you that these people doesn't have one group leading them. They're not united. They don't have one group leading them, giving them the orders. Each group has the different orders, and they don't go by their words. They say something, then they do something else.
Yes, but by the way, here's where the West has some culpability, do they not? Because if the West likes to say that, I remember John Kerry saying, I can't, this is not easy to separate these people because, you know, we don't have control. Well, one form of control he could have is to say, I have no use for them. They are criminals. Whatever happens to a criminal is his own tough luck. Then you would notice that they all pay attention. But so long as Kerry plays a game of, I don't really know him that well. Well, if you don't know him that well, tell him goodbye. That would work.
Yeah. But I think the Obama administration is trying to do as much as they can chaos in Syria, and not only in Syria, around the world, for the new administration coming in, the Trump administration, that he says that he's going to sit with Putin and solve the problems and all of that. So I think the Obama administration are trying to do as much problems as they can in outside of the United States for the new administration, because as you know, as you can see, they don't get along. Mm-hmm. The United States, they don't get along. Yeah. The new administration and the old administration.
Well, let me another $64,000 question, as we say around here, is the game that's played, and I have to tell you, our major press here plays this game to this day. It wants this to be a sectarian conflict, and they want to make it Sunni Shia. But how is that on the ground in Syria, where you live? That game has failed, has it not?
I just want to tell you one thing. The Syrian coast, I'm going to give you an example. the Syrian coast is 70% from one sect, okay? Mm-hmm. Different from the other sect, okay? Let's call it 70% of the coast is Alawites, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If there was a Sunni Shiite or Sunni Alawite conflict in Syria, will the 2.5 million Sunnis from Aleppo come to the Syrian coast to running away?
Mm.
That will show you that there is no Sunni Shiite or Sunni Alawite conflict in Syria, and that field, and that will show the Syrian people, the majority of them, not all of them, the majority of them are smarter and they are much wiser than falling into the hatred between each other, because they know that these murders are coming. They're not coming to kill the Alawites or they're not coming to kill the Shiites. They're coming to kill anyone. Mm-hmm. When the terrorists in the suburbs of Aleppo shot missiles on Aleppo civilians, they were shooting on Sunnis. Mm-hmm. When they did the massacres in Ma'loul and Sidnaya, they were killing Christians. When they did the massacres in suburbs of Damascus and suburbs of Hamas, they were killing Alawites. When they attacked Sueda, they were killing Druzes. So they're not going after one sect. They're going to destroy Syria and kill Syrians. Just because you're a Syrian, you'll be dead.
Yes. It's Syria that's the target of this. I would be remiss if I don't ask you about what more we have learned about the little girl that was advertised to the world as Anne Frank. By the way, if Anne Frank was in Syria, she would be praying for the support of the Syrian army, because the Syrian army is not sectarian and would protect her. And she would not be safe from the maniacs and murderers who we got to know very intimately in Aleppo. Now that she's made it to Turkey and appeared with her father and her mother, do we know any more about who her father is and her mother?
Actually, her role, look, always when the West propaganda, the media or the American administration or all of the Western side, they use things. Let me give you an example. They used Mubarak. They finished from him. They took him out. They used Bin Ali. They used him. They took him out. So her role finished.
Mm-hmm.
She had a role on the media. She had a role in the Security Council and all the media war. She had a role. Now her role is finished, and there's no need for her. So no one will mention her anymore. No one will talk about her anymore. Everyone will start. They will make you to forget her.
Yes.
That's how the Western media works.
Yeah, but we should remember to remind them. Because once she got to Turkey, it turned out that she didn't really seem to talk like someone who had that kind of any command of English. And and even her mother really doesn't appear to have much English. So a lot of people are wondering what kind of team that was. But it's certainly identifying propaganda of that type is very important, because she was on the front page practically every day here, as the Syrian army was closer and closer to liberating Aleppo. I want to ask you, Stephen, and I won't keep you much longer, and we really appreciate you stayed up to talk to us. I'm curious to know, those people who boarded the buses, were they vetted? Is there a good accounting of who got on those buses and that sort of thing? Because there seems to be confusion in some people's minds as to who they were and that sort of thing.
The people who are surrounded, look, we can know something. Every time those people who are surrounded in an area, when you see the Western media go panicking, that means there is important people from their side in that surrounded area. That happened in every time. When you see the United States of America administration, the Obama administration, or the Western and Security Council and the media going and attacking and doing propaganda, that means there's people who are surrounded. They are important to those people. So who and names and numbers.
Call them assets, right?
Yeah. So who and numbers and names, we don't know.
Do you know the organization, by the way? Did they have identify them by brigade or by company? Did they have labels and that sort of thing?
Yes, they do. They do have labels. They do have names. The one group are called Zinki, Fatah Islam, Yesh Islam. All of them, they are in those areas. Jabhat al-Nusra. Also, they were in that area and other groups.
Mm-hmm. But they were identified. Somebody had to watch them get on the buses, right, and make sure. For example, they caught them trying to bring bodies. Literally bringing
the government
and weapons, some government. Weapons.
Yeah, so the Syrian government and also the Red Cross, the Islamic Red Cross in Syria. The Russians also had a big role in that.
So there were some observers there.
Yes, there were.
Who followed
yes, there
it
was.
From when they get on the bus and when they were taken to Idlib and noticed. Make sure that they all got off and that they were accounted for, right?
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. Well, Stephen, it's been great to talk to you. It's very informative. Tell us, I guess, last thing. How is life there in Aleppo? How are people feeling? Did they have a special celebration? We saw Aleppo with Christmas trees
yes.
and Santa Claus.
Yes.
How did they feel
yes,
in
they
Latakia?
The people in Latakia also celebrated, and the Aleppos in Latakia celebrated. The people of Syria all celebrated of the victory of Aleppo because the victory of Aleppo is not the victory only of the city of Aleppo. It's the victory of all of Syria.
Mm-hmm.
And President Assad, in his last interview, when the war, the battle against terrorism in Aleppo were going on, he said, Aleppo is in our eyes and we will have it back. And we will not rest until we have Aleppo back and every city in Syria back. Mm-hmm. So, the Syrian government did their promise, and they did get Aleppo back. This Aleppo people went down in the streets celebrating fireworks. It make anybody Syrian cry because it was amazing. Mm-hmm. Also, the people of Latakia and the Aleppo people in Latakia also celebrated because now people can rebuild their house. Start a new chapter of their life.
So it's very clear that their morale has been lifted, right? In other words, the mood that you, if you go to the cafe or you walk down the street or you look at television, there's a mood change where you are.
Yeah. Yeah, the mood changed that we know their the war is almost finished. We know we're victorying. We have faith in our army and our allies. Today, the Syrian army is much powerful than other because it's not a classical army anymore. It's they're doing now street war and guerrilla warfare. So they are much stronger. They're doing their best. Mm-hmm. The allies are doing their best. All of the allies, if it's the Russians or the Iranians or the SSMP or Hezbollah or anyone who are fighting with the Syrian army and all of the Syrian people who are fighting voluntarily, they're all doing their best. And as I told you, a military information told me the other day that a few more days and we'll have the suburbs of Damascus, that area where all of the war is, mm-hmm. will be liberated and the war will be pumped back to Damascus. And as we know, the world started in Damascus. The earth started, Adam and Eve started in Damascus, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
And no power on earth will defeat the city that was mentioned in the Bible. Mm-hmm. So from Syria,
Paul was going to Damascus.
Yeah, from Syria and the capital of peace to the world, I wish everyone a happy new year. And I wish that to the world communities to wake up and don't believe the propaganda. And I hope everyone will have a happy new year and God have mercy and may all the souls rest in peace that were being killed by terrorism. Because whoever was killed, if he's a Russian or Chinese or Turkish or Syrian or Lebanese or American or anyone whoever you are, if you're killed by terrorists, may your soul rest in peace. Because terrorism knows no nationality, terrorism knows no religion, terrorism knows nothing. They are just a machine, killing machine,
yeah.
Funded by Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. Stephen, that's a very eloquent conclusion. We do appreciate it. And you take care of yourself, and we look forward to talking to you again soon as these victories, more victories are won by the Syrian army. Thank you.
I hope so. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. As they say in the Middle East, God willing. That was Stephen Sahuni. He writes for Global. You find him in Global Research and elsewhere. He's a Syrian-American, lives in, as he told us, Latakia. We've been insisting on this point that Aleppo was liberated here, if you can believe it. Toronto Star and Globe called it the fall of Aleppo. By the way, they were only talking about East Aleppo. They were talking about Aleppo was already under control of the Syrian government, that is to say, Syrian people. And Eastern Aleppo was under the control of people who were quite proud of the fact that they were what they called jihadists, and they would insist on the imposition of a very extreme, and I think the appropriate word is Wahhabi, idea of Islam on anybody they felt like it. And they were, and they did kill children publicly, boasted about it. They took men who were soldiers, that would be Syrian army soldiers, who are, all soldiers are legally protected. If you capture someone, you hold him, and then there's international law. You cannot murder a prisoner. They made it a point to murder prisoners. I never saw an editorial in the Star or Globe saying, we got to do something about those people. But at any rate, so when those type of characters lost, it became the fall of Aleppo. I would say, yeah, the fall of your silly dreams, you moron. That's what it actually was.